following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a brand new week, everybody. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. It is the 5th of December. Man, oh man, oh man. We are getting down to the end of the year. Wow. It's still business as usual around here. A lot going on. Let me tell you, today, big hearing at the Supreme Court. We will get into that tomorrow because let me tell you what happened. So early this morning, I wake up. I realize, you know, I was going to call Marcy Wheeler last week and invite her on the show, but she did Brad Friedman's broadcast on Thursday, I think. And Brad's weird about that, like because we share many of the same guests, and he's like, you got to let me know if you can have Marcy on so we don't have her on the same week. So I saw he was having her on, so I didn't call her last week, but I reached out this morning and I asked her, you know, if she's available at all this week or next. And she said, actually, today is the best day. Well, it was like, you know, 7 a.m. when I reached here. She's in Ireland. So I said, well, I can do today. She said, but there's a hearing at 10 o'clock your time that I need to be on. I'm like, okay, well, how about in like 20 minutes? So I was able to throw on some clothes, a little bit of makeup, and 20 minutes it was. So we taped today's interview this morning. Now, there has been some breaking news about something that we spoke about. So one of the topics that we will unfold is that of the judge in the case of the special master for the former guy's Mar-a-Lago stolen documents. And this just came down from Charlie Savage at the New York Times. On Mastodon, by the way. I got this on Mastodon, not on Twitter. Charlie_Savage@masto.ai, in case you were wondering, wrote, without comment, Judge Cannon grants the one-week delay DOJ requested for the Mar-a-Lago documents, special master deadlines that will be mooted on Thursday if Trump doesn't get a stay of the 11th Circuit Court ruling shutting everything down. Well, he won't. So there's that. So we will get to that. We'll talk. You know, so much happened since the last time I spoke with Marcy. So we cover a lot, and that was only 3 weeks ago. So let me tell you one other thing before we hit the Marcy interview, because it will take up the rest of the hour. And that is, you're going to hear a lot about this tomorrow and even more on Wednesday. So I want to get it out of the way now while we have a moment. The, you know, Time Magazine every year, this time of the year, announces their Person of the Year. It used to be Man of the Year, but of course they, you know, got with modern times and it's now the Person of the Year, and it's not always a person. But despite what, you know, the former guy tries to say, or how he, his mind, if you can call it that, works, being named Time's Person of the Year is not an honor. It's not something people like strive for. It's not like you get an award and it's a thing of honor. What it is, Time Magazine's Person of the Year, is picked by the editors of the magazine based on who they felt had the most influence on the world in the previous year. Now that I took right from their write-up, but it used to be the most influence on news coverage. I guess, you know, or semantics, but close. Anyway, so today they released their list of the 10 finalists. I don't even know why they do this. I guess because it's hype for them and they don't care that people misunderstand what the hell the thing is all about. Again, it's not an honor. It's the person who was most influenced or had the most influence on the world in the year just about ending. So here are the 10 that they are choosing from. And they say it's in no particular order. Xi Jinping, president for life of China. The U.S. Supreme Court, what I call the extreme court. And that, you know, overturning Roe v. Wade and then the hearing today. And that's a contender. The third one is Elon Musk. Seriously? He was it last year. Maybe they jumped the gun a little bit. Next up, Liz Cheney. I don't think she'll get it. Volodymyr Zelensky, possibly. Mackenzie Scott? Now, she's deserving of an honor. You're going, who's Mackenzie Scott? Mackenzie Scott is Jeff Bezos' ex-wife, who got a hefty divorce settlement and promptly gave at least half of it away, and she will give all of it away. And I don't have the list of philanthropies that she gave money to in front of me, but she's doing good for the world, but you can cross her off the list. That's not her. Next up, protesters in Iran. Okay. Ron DeSantis? Oh, give me a fucking break. No. If you want troll of the year, yeah, but no. Janet Yellen is next. Fed chair? Is she the Fed chair? Oh, she's the Treasury Secretary, sorry. No. And gun safety advocates. If only. Now, if they had gotten an assault weapons ban through, then I'd say yes. So I'm thinking it's either going to be, here's my picks. It'll either be the U.S. Supreme Court, but they should call it the U.S. Extreme Court because it's no longer supreme, or Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. So those are my thoughts. Anyway, it's going to be all over the news in the next 2 days, so I thought we'd get a jump on it and beat them to the punch. Okay, because, you know, we can. So with that, with no further ado, there's not much else I like to do better on a Monday than speak with Marcy Wheeler. As always, I'm thrilled to welcome Marcy Wheeler back to the show. It's been kind of a busy week here in the, well, in the world. Marcy, I don't even know where to begin. I guess we should begin with the Oath Keepers verdict, because for the first time in many, many years, two people have been found guilty of seditious conspiracy. This is a big deal, yes?
Yep, 2 out of 5, including one of your neighbors, Kelly Meggs, the car sales guy.
So do you think that was good? I mean, was there a reason that all five of them weren't and just these two? Or do you agree with what the outcome?
Yeah, I mean, they're Roger Parloff at Lawfare, who covered the trial day to day, did a really interesting piece speculating on why the split on the verdicts may be. And the fact of the matter is that there were three charged conspiracies. One was sedition. Another was obstructing the vote certification. And a third was interfering with Congress. And the top line sedition one, Stuart Rhodes and Kelly Meggs, who's the car sales guy that I mentioned, who lives close to you or used to before he went to federal prison. His wife still lives close to you. She's up in the third Oath Keeper trial.
Oh, boy.
They, I think, were charged because they kept talking about civil war and overthrowing the government. And the other people were not as vocal espousing those views. Everyone was convicted of obstructing the vote certification. In other words, I think that's right. In other words, everyone was convicted of trying to prevent Congress from certifying Joe Biden as president. The other verdicts, I think, were more about what did you have proof there was an agreement to do. And we're going to see, frankly, I'll warn people, we're going to see the same, obviously, in the next Oath Keeper trial, which starts this week, and then the Proud Boy trial, which we won't really get into evidence until right after the new year. But in those cases, the question is not just what did you want to do? And I think for all of these people, it's fairly clear they wanted to prevent Joe Biden from becoming president. The question is how. I mean, how many of them actually knew that if they stopped the certification on January 6th, it would stop Joe Biden from becoming president? Not everyone I mean, everyone sort of knew that. The question is there abundant proof beyond a reasonable doubt that that's what motivated people on that day? But then the other question is, what was there an agreement to do? So, for example, in the Proud Boy case, they're having fights about this right now. There's clearly a plan among the leaders, among at least Joe Biggs and Ethan Nordine and Enrique Tarrio, another Floridian, other Floridians close to you. They're all your neighbors.
That's why I'm getting out of here. That's why I'm leaving.
I know, right? They're like all these militias are taking over. There's clearly that there was a plan because they said, we've got a plan and here's the plan I'm sharing with Enrique. The question is, what is the plan? And because they didn't share the plan broadly, they didn't say, hey, everyone, we're going to overthrow the government with the 60 Proud Boys that were on the Telegram channel that they were using to organize. The Proud Boys are saying there was no plan to overthrow the government much, you know, or even to overthrow Congress. And so that's the evidentiary burden before prosecutors. Here's the other thing about the Proud Boy case. I have far more confidence in the prosecutors that did the Oath Keepers than I do in the Proud Boys.
Oh, really?
That's the way it is. And the Proud Boys is a far more complex case just because there are a lot more people involved. There are one thing that the Proud Boys are likely to lose on, or sorry, that the government is likely to lose on in the Proud Boy case this week is the government rightly argued that the Proud Boys intentionally riled up, quote unquote, the normies. They said that in their texts that morning. They said, I want to see these normies burn this city to the ground. I want to see these normies, I forget the term, but take on the pigs or something. I mean, so their goal was not themselves to commit assault against cops. Mm. It was to incite others to commit assault against cops. And the first thing you see when you see video of the insurrection is Joe Biggs talking to this guy, Ryan Samsel. Samsel taking off his jacket, walking up to the first barrier and knocking over, I want to say her name is Carolyn Stewart, knocking over a female cop, giving her a concussion, and that sets off the entire riot. And early in this investigation, Samsel had described to the FBI what Biggs had said to him to incite him. And then after he was assaulted in jail, and we still don't know what happened, no one has yet been charged with that assault, though it may well be a guard, but that, you know, given how close the Proud Boys are to law enforcement, it's unclear whether that, you know, in whose service that guard would have been working. But anyway, since then, Samsel has stopped, you know, like did not cooperate with the FBI as it looked like he might. And so, you know, yes, it's clear that the Proud Boys walked in with a plan to incite the normies, but it's hard to present that given evidentiary rules. That's not a conspiracy. That's not a theory of conspiracy. That's not a legal argument that they were in a conspiracy. And so that's going to make it harder for prosecutors to prove their case against the Proud Boys. So we'll see.
Is there just one Proud Boys trial? Because I know there are a number of Oath Keepers trials.
Right. So the Oath Keepers, there's two sedition trials and then one or more conspiracy to obstruct trial. Mm-hmm. With the Proud Boys, it's far harder to get your hands around. There were six people charged in the Proud Boy leaders case. One has definitely flipped, a guy from North Carolina, Charles Donahoe. Another guy, his lawyers have not said anything either in paper filings or in hearings for months. So that's a sign that he may have flipped as well. Mm. The case against three of the remainders, Joe Biggs, Enrique Tarrio, and Ethan Nordine, I'd say are pretty strong. It's weaker against the fourth guy, Zach Real. And then there are like two guys who weren't at the riot, at least two, have flipped. And then there are all these other people. I mean, the way in which the Proud Boys explicitly were organized that day was a cell structure. So like there's a cell in Kansas City and two of those people have pled guilty, one of whom is cooperating. But the knowledge of what the attack was You know, it was more like we're going to do what Joe Biggs tells us to do. And so what the testimony of all of those other Proud Boys is, and what the legal exposure to all of these other Proud Boys for things like obstruction is much more nebulous because of that structure. And then to make it worse, the Proud Boys for a long time considered themselves informants with law enforcement, including Metropolitan Police in DC. Thaddeo is claiming that if one cop doesn't get to testify, his entire case gets thrown out. It's a bogus argument. The cop has been under investigation for his ties to Thaddeo since at least February. He wants to claim that so that people can, but like even Joe Biggs claimed he was an informant. Joe Biggs claimed he was an informant because in the Bill Barr DOJ, there was this notion that Antifa was this big malign force to fight. And so Joe Biggs was seen as an ally of law enforcement. And so these FBI agents in Florida, again, your neighbors, said, oh, Joe Biggs actually limited the damage of the attack on the Capitol. And it's like, no. You're an idiot. That's the problem, is you think Joe Biggs is your ally. And in fact, he is accused of basically domestic terrorism. And so that's what's going on. And it does make it a very difficult case to try. And I want to set that expectation as people go in, because it is there's some really alarming stuff. And it, to me, it's very clear that they provided structure to the mob on January 6th. But that's harder to prove legally.
Gotcha.
Than it is, you know, journalistically.
Okay, I understand. So you're keeping track of all these trials that are ongoing, and these are the biggies, but there are still others that are working their way through the courts. At any given time, how many trials do you think are going on?
Well, we're at a key stage now where, Amit Mehta, the judge in the Oath Keepers case, is doing a trial, an assault trial, in between Oath Keeper 1 and Oath Keeper 2 trial. And so he'll be, like, I just saw a video from the wife of the first convicted January 6er. And she was like, you know, I think Judge Mehta is probably a pretty fair judge, you know, like, but she's like, he's been a nonstop trial for 3 months. And it's true. You know, and then there's a bench trial from one of the biggest guys accused of assault. There's a status hearing for Riley Williams, the graper who was prosecuted, was convicted on some, but not all charges. So there's six in-person events of import today, plus a couple that I'm allowed to call in on. So things are really moving on. And things like going back to Joe Biggs, and I argued very early on, if you prosecute Joe Biggs, particularly with a conspiracy charge, then it becomes easier to prosecute some of your other Florida neighbors, like, say, Roger Stone. Alex Jones's videographer pled guilty, and Alex Jones's sidekick, Owen Schroyer, says he's probably going to plead guilty in January. Now, this is just a trespassing, but usually that requires some kind of interview with the FBI. I mean, usually the FBI is using these initial guys to get your comms and to get an interview so that you can get the further people. So a lot going on, a lot of it that we can't see. This is my offer to you to segue to the special counsel.
Yes. Well, the good. Okay. So since we've last spoken, there were a number of, obviously, there's stories going on parallel tracks nonstop. Since we last spoke, a special counsel, Merrick Garland, announced that he's appointing a special counsel to oversee the whole of the investigations into Donald Trump. So this special counsel is doing everything.
Right. The way Garland described it is, and this was sort of interesting because the day in which she was appointed, there were three new grand juries seated in D.C. And we don't yet have confirmation that those three are all his. Mm-hmm. But you know, most journalists who are covering this are like, are those three grand juries all Jack Smith's? Now, the way Merrick Garland described it is the stolen documents case and anything arising out of that, arising or has arisen out of that. In other words, like the stolen documents case and any Trump efforts to obstruct that, to obstruct the investigation into obstruction. So like witness tampering to prevent somebody like Kash Patel from testifying. And then he described the January 6th stuff in two bunches or in two ways. One is to prevent the certification of January 6th. And the other one is to, he didn't say overthrow the winner of the 2020 election. But the point is that he described in his description, in his order appointing Jack Smith, and if you wanted me to, I could go dig that up, but he described the January 6th related crimes in two ways, as well as anything that will arise or has already arisen in those investigations. And that's interesting given that there were three grand juries seated that day. Now, you know, I think we don't yet know that those grand juries are tied to Jack Smith. We do know that the interviews continue apace. Last week, Stephen Miller was interviewed, yes. Dan Scavino was interviewed, two more of Trump's like White House to Mar-a-Lago aides were interviewed. The assumption is those are all January 6th, but the two Pats were interviewed, Pat Cipollone and Pat Philbin, both White House counsel for Trump, but who were involved in the effort to reclaim these stolen documents after Trump left the White House. And between them, they share the same lawyer, by the way, which is interesting. Between them, they were in the grand jury area for 10 hours wow. last week.
Now you're mentioning the documents, and this applies to that. In the middle of all this, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals stepped in and said that special master done, and then reprimanded the judge in Florida who carried Donald Trump's water. So
also your neighbor.
Also my neighbor. So is this part of that? Did this, or they just happened at the same time?
No, they happened at the same time. It is possible because you wouldn't need, okay, the 11th Circuit said, nah, you're not special to Donald Trump. I mean, that's yes. the important thing to take away from that order, which is two Donald Trump appointments and one of the most conservative, probably the most conservative chief judge for an appellate court in the country, William Pryor. And they basically said, you can't have what you want, Donald Trump. I get that you're a former president, but if we make this exception for you as a former president, then every single subject of an investigation is going to demand the same, and that would upend all criminal law, all criminal precedents for how you execute a warrant. I mean, that's basically, they basically said, you're not special, Donald Trump. And it's true. I mean, he's not. He's just a former president at this point. And so, but the thing that's important to know, because I was fighting with people on Twitter this morning who are still saying Merrick Garland is doing nothing, DOJ is still enjoined from doing anything with the unclassified documents until at least, what is it, Thursday or Friday?
Really?
The 11th Circuit gave Trump a deadline for appealing. And unless he succeeds in getting a stay on their order, then after 7 days, then the case automatically goes back to Aline Cannon, your neighbor. Hey. And she has been ordered to dismiss the special master. And so only at that point, only at the point when the injunction is formally overturned, and it's not yet, it won't until later this week at the earliest, can DOJ then go, and I, this is speculation, but it's informed speculation. Just as an example, there's a document that was seized from Trump's home, and it includes, a document classified secret, a document classified confidential, a message from a pollster, a message from a religious leader, a message from, I'm going to forget that one, and then probably some lawyer.
Okay.
So it's an 11-page document. It was found in a desk drawer in Trump's office. And it and all of those messages I just told you about, with the possible exception of the lawyer one, they date to after January 2021. So they are proof that Trump or somebody in his employ mixed classified information with the stuff that was his personal business after the time he was no longer president. And it's sort of like a mini smoking gun. I mean, it's not like he stole the nuclear codes, but it proves that people who shouldn't have been accessing classified information after they left the presidency were. And right. It proves that he was intermingling his own private business with this classified information that belongs to us. Mini smoking gun. Well, most of that smoking gun, FBI cannot use for any investigatory purpose. That's what the injunction does. So they found a smoking gun in Trump's desk drawer, mini smoking gun. Okay. It's not the nuclear codes, but they can't use it to conduct an investigation until after this injunction is over. And it is my suspicion that if there were ever to be Espionage Act charges against Trump, it would be based on documents like this. The other one is he gave some kind of clemency to Roger Stone. Mm-hmm. And that document was intermixed with either that document is classified secret, or it was intermixed with a document classified secret, and or also some information about a French president that people believe to be Macron. And so that's another one that Trump has no business storing Roger Stone pardons in his desk drawer.
Right.
And he did. But Trump really has no business storing Roger Stone pardons in his desk drawer with something about maybe Emmanuel Macron. So those two documents, if Trump were ever to be charged, are ones that they would likely charge him on. But DOJ can't even, like, it is my suspicion that whoever's desk drawer that was, and my guess is it's his a secretary who moved from the White House with him to Mar-a-Lago and still treated him as the president, still right. called him POTUS. Her name's Molly Michael. She was interviewed by the January 6th committee. She's very loyal to Trump. My suspicion is you don't charge those documents until you put Molly Michael in front of a grand jury, just to make sure maybe she'd say, oh, I snuck to the cabinet and took out the classified documents and Donald Trump didn't know about that. So you need to put her or whoever put together this document, it may not be her, you need to put her in front of a grand jury before you can charge him. And for reasons that are legally sound, DOJ can't do that until Friday at the very earliest, and more likely 2 weeks from now.
Wow.
And so okay. that's where we are at.
So that's pending. But meantime, these three judges, this three judge panel of the very conservative 11th Circuit Court really slapped down Judge Cannon. I mean, they scolded her, I guess, as much as that can be done. She's serving under a lifetime appointment, so there's no getting rid of her. But they've injured her, huh? Yes, no?
Yeah, I mean, they basically called her out for making stuff up, which she did. You know, I think that far few people who are covering this really did call out what she did. I mean, one of the things I pointed out is she invented the harm that she would use to intervene with Trump. And I think the judges on the panel did a much better job of covering that than most journalists did. There is a pending request before her this week. Like the morning of this hearing, Trump's lawyers, absent Chris Keiss, who used to be Solicitor General of Florida, who is the grown up in the room. So Chris Keiss was not on this filing, but the morning of that hearing, Trump's lawyer said, hey, we need the affidavit that was used to search him. And after the 11th Circuit ruled, DOJ was like, hey, can we get a stay on having to respond to this request for unsealing the affidavit? Because probably this special master is going to go away. Probably mm-hmm. Alien Cannon is not going to be in charge anymore in another week. And Trump refused to do that. So it's unclear what Trump's going to do. You know, we know that Trump is nuts right now. I think that is a good symptom, that Trump is feeling rather cornered. That doesn't make him safe, but it makes him cornered. But there's still stuff going on.
It's, right.
You know, so.
Got it. Okay, so Marcy Wheeler. Now things get weird, as if they weren't already. So in the last month, I guess it's been about a month, Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, takes over Twitter. He spends $44 billion for this website that is not worth $44 billion. And in the time since, he's run it into, I don't know what he's turned it into. It's a frightening place. Over the weekend,
$8 chin is what people call it.
$8 chin.
And for your listeners who don't understand the reference, like 8chan, 4chan, they're the original sites where all these fascist memes started. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that different from 8chan, except that Elmo, Elon Musk, wants you to pay $8 to participate in this toxic swamp of right. Nazi ideology.
Exactly. So now, I guess he had, in addition to all the crazy stuff going along with that, we don't have to talk about it. We're both on Mastodon now, still on Twitter, but knowing that the end is probably not too far away at Twitter. So now, over the weekend, Elmo, promoted the outing of the Twitter files. And I wasn't present for the big announcement, but I understand it was delayed a few hours. And then he handed it off to Matt Taibbi. You know, this is really sad because I used to really like and respect Matt Taibbi, but I've watched him follow Glenn Greenwald, area Substacker, as you refer to him, down this rabbit hole. And so what happened? What is going on here?
Look, I mean, neither Glenn nor Taibbi have been disciplined enough, particularly without editors. I mean, I have no editor either. I screw up a lot of the time, but they're really undisciplined and they're really not very good. I mean, Glenn Greenwald has only ever been as good as the people who do his, to read the documents for him. I know that because I used to be one of the people that he borrowed the work of, and he's always had people doing the reading for him. So Glenn has never been competent at reading documents himself. Taibbi, you know, he delves into matters that he doesn't understand. Like, you know, he really went overboard on the Russian investigation, and he, like Glenn Greenwald and a bunch of other people, treated the Steele dossier and the Alpha Bank allegations as the Russian investigation, and therefore ignored Trump's five top aides who pled guilty or were found guilty of lying to hide their Russian ties. So it's a game they're playing, and Taibbi has always made classic mistakes. For example, he until very recently, at least, believed in what I call the single server fallacy, which is that the Russians are only alleged to have hacked one server, not 11 or whatever it was that the Democrats owned, and not an AWS server on which the real crown jewels that were. I mean, they just never understood the full allegations, and therefore their attempts to rebut it were laughable.
Right. And they still insist that there was no there, right? That Russia, they agree with Donald Trump, it was a hoax.
Yeah, I mean, they do. And they, you know, and they spin themselves up with stuff that is unsound. And because they're not asked to, regardless, it's unsound. And so that's the habit that Taibbi has adopted in recent years as he has spun free from Rolling Stone and editors and so on and so forth. He did the same with COVID. And so this is the guy that Elmo decided to entrust to read these documents. And the most important thing that happened was he pointed to the Biden. First he says both the Biden campaign and the White House made requests and had them honored.
Okay.
Now, if you are as Taibbi, or can I call him Maddie Dick Picks?
Absolutely. I love it.
if you claim to be concerned about the First Amendment, where your focus should be then is on the demands that the White House made.
That's right.
Where you should be showing, you know, the files you should be showing are what kind of requests did Trump make? Were they reasonable, and how closely were people in government, how aggressively were people in government responding to Twitter? And instead of looking at that, he looked at this request from Biden. from the Biden campaign. So he chose not to look at the government pressure and chose instead to look at the pressure from a private entity. And he showed that in response to a request from Biden, they took down five links. Well, people looked into what those links were, and they were to dick pics. They were to Hunter Biden's penis, posted without authorization, posted without any kind of consent to Twitter. And in one case, at least, the image of a sex worker posted to Twitter without her consent as well. And so, for Maddie Dick Pics, that was his big reveal. Like, oh, you know, Biden asked and they abided by the request. Those were all violations of the terms of service. They all, you know, at least as they existed before Elmo.
Right.
And Elmo then took Maddie Dick Pics and saying, oh, look, if this is not a clear violation of the First Amendment, I don't know what is. It's not a violation of the First Amendment to take down somebody's non-consensual dick pics. It simply is not. And that's what the entire frothy right wing got frothed up about over the weekend. But there were other problems with Taibbi's reporting. He left out context about warnings Twitter and we understand Facebook had earlier in the summer, before anyone knew about the Hunter Biden quote unquote laptop, about concerns of an information operation targeting Hunter Biden. That came from actual evidence about a suspected hack of Burisma. That was, you know, that, but that's not to say that the laptop was hacked. Mm-hmm. We still don't know. But what we know is that there were good reasons to be concerned about, you know, a packaged up deal showing Hunter Biden's dick pics, right? Like Twitter had reason to be concerned. Maddie Dick Pics didn't provide that context, although presumably that should be in the stash that Elmo gave him. And if it's not, we should start asking questions about why Elmo suppressed that.
Right.
And we also know, for example, as I said, you know, Maddie Dick Pics said the White House was pressuring Twitter, but chose not to show that. He claimed, oh, there was no pushback from Democrats except Ro Khanna, and then showed evidence that there was pushback from at least one other Democrat besides Ro Khanna. I mean, it's just like his own reporting discredited his own reporting. And
right.
He did so because he very clearly walked into this project with his preconceptions, and he was looking for confirmation of his preconceptions. And then the most interesting thing, since we already raised Area Substacker, Glenn yes. Greenwald, is that at one point he was like, I found no evidence of government involvement in the decision to take down the New York Post story. That should have been the takeaway. You know, somebody who has suspicions about it all looks at the primary records and finds no evidence of the conspiracy theory that the right wing has been spinning up for months and months and years. That should be it. Game
right,
over.
Right.
But Glenn Greenwald then takes that. Maddie Dick Pics' conclusion that there's no there. And Glenn Greenwald spun it all out of proportion and said, you know, he was talking about a foreign government interference. I mean, like, it's what the story should be at this point is the performance of people like Maddie Dick Pics and Elmo and Area Substacker, or, you know, these men who all have real names, but of the, you know, that they, what Elmo has generously given us is primary evidence that he and Maddie Dick Pics and Area Substacker are all wrong.
Okay.
And that even though that they've got the primary evidence in hand that they're wrong, they're still spinning it up.
Right.
And they are finding in the fact that Twitter took down non-consensual dick pics. What everyone should want. I mean, I don't want to see Hunter Biden's dick.
Nor do I.
Apparently, Maddie Taibbi does want to see Hunter Biden's dick because that's the only explanation for being outraged by what he showed last Friday. And he's making of the fact that non-consensual dick pics were taken down some kind of scandal when instead it is evidence that the process worked like it should. Like, we all would want it to work.
Right. This is disturbing on so many levels, because first of all, for Maddie Dick Pics to do the thing allegedly report the story when he's given all the information by Elmo, and to report it on Elmo's platform in a Twitter thread form. It just, to me, does not, you know, does not reek of independent journalism in any form. I mean, if you're going to do it, then you write the story. But this seems he's carrying water for Elmo.
The richest man in the world.
Right.
Yeah. For somebody who might still be the richest man in the world. I mean, yeah.
That's right.
He got a lot of criticism about that, and he responded very badly. He was like, because a lot of people said he was doing PR for Elmo, which yeah. of course he's doing. He's like, oh, you're just one of those people who quote the CIA anonymously. And I pointed out that people like Jane Mayer quoted the CIA anonymously, and in so doing broke torture, you know, broke the torture story. Jeremy Scahill, his close associate, has done a lot of stories quoting people anonymously who have ties to the CIA or DOD or what have you. I mean, that's reporting. And Maddie Dickpix is complaining that he has been exposed as somebody who's just the handmaiden for the richest man in the world, and in the process embarrassing himself by right. claiming that it's a scandal that Dickpix were taken down. The story, I think, should be about Maddie Dickpix and Elmo and this fail. And, you know, there is some focus on that. I think that, you know, like Kevin McCarthy said after this came out, oh, this is proof we have to do hearings. I think that the press needs to then say Kevin McCarthy is outraged that non-consensual dick pics were taken down, because that is what this amounts to at this point, is that the right wing has themselves spun up over the fact that non-consensual dick pics were removed from Twitter.
Yet, and we've discussed this before, Marcy, they still insist that the Hunter Biden laptop is the big story that we've been waiting for. And now that they're going to take over control of the House, investigations are coming. I've asked you before, we've talked about it. I've looked into it. I don't see any story there. What is the big deal about Hunter Biden's laptop? As far as I can tell, he never worked inside the administration. He may have, you know, parlayed his father's name. Well, that sucks, but okay, this is not exactly anything new. Where's the story?
Right. And we still have no confirmation that, quote unquote, the laptop was his laptop and was not stolen from him, was not based on hacked documents. A lot of people say that New York Times, Washington Post, and CBS have all confirmed the document. That's not true. And in fact, one of the two guys who did the assessment for the Washington Post was on Twitter last night, making it very clear that what he found, his conclusion, his top line conclusion, is the disk that was shared with him showed signs of manipulation. It was the opposite of a sound provenance. Now, the CBS report claims that there was a clean disk that was different from the one that the guy who I just described looked at. But if that's true that all this time there's been a clean version of Hunter Biden's laptop disk, then it means that Max Isaac lied in past interactions with the journalists, because he said the only copy he made was this torturous process of copying and copying and copying. And that should raise more questions about why anybody actually looked at the content on the laptop. I mean, there's no set of facts where you can say that the provenance of this quote unquote laptop is not really, really problematic.
Right.
And that should be the takeaway before we even get into the contents of it. Yeah. Hunter Biden was trading on his position, and people were trying to manipulate that to access Joe Biden. That's absolutely true. And can we talk about Jared Kushner's $2 billion?
Hello.
Right. If you care about foreign influence, let's have hearings about Jared Kushner. Let's have hearings about Trump's new Gulf deal with the Saudis. Let's have hearings about the new Trump hotel in Oman. Let's absolutely have hearings about the way that Trump cashed in on his position as president with lots of foreign powers and not
his
all
children. America. You know, you said Jared, but look at Ivanka's Chinese patents. Look at, yeah. I mean, the list goes on and on. So, I mean, irony appears to be dead here in that they're pointing a finger at Hunter Biden and saying this is the smoking gun that will take down the Biden administration. He had nothing to do with the Biden administration.
And let's take a step back. I mean, fundamentally, what this is about is that the Republicans have no policy. You know, they ran on this election saying that Biden had no solution for rising gas prices. Now gas prices are under $3 a gallon, mm-hmm. where you live, not where I live.
Right.
you know, Biden continues to actually, I mean, and I was not a Biden supporter. Biden actually is doing a pretty good job as president.
Yep.
And meanwhile, the only thing, the single solitary thing Republicans want to do with their new majority is to chase conspiracy theories. That's it. That's that's what for them they want to use the power of government for. And I think that the press really needs to be held to calling that for what it is. You know, like the press needs to be held for not treating the Hunter Biden inquiry as anything reasonable, as anything that the government has any business in being involved with, particularly now that Maddie Dick Pics has helpfully proven that there was no inappropriate government influence on the takedown of the New York Post story.
Right. But that brings us to the next shoe dropping, which is inexplicably Donald Trump. What he takes from this Maddie Dick Pics Twitter thread is that this proves everything. And so we must suspend the Constitution and make him president again. Did I miss something?
No, look, I mean, I did a post that went up just as we started recording today. I think that Trump is having an increasingly difficult time commanding the attention of the press. And the one tried and true way that he has of commanding the attention of the press is to engage increasingly inflammatory hate speech, inflammatory attacks on the Constitution. I'm not saying that makes it right. I'm not saying it's any less dangerous for him doing it. I'm saying, let's talk about what he's doing. He's trying to get the attention of the press. And you know what, Nicole? It works.
Yeah.
Even people who oppose Donald Trump keep serving as what it's my new word, their content mules to take his tweets from his failing social media site and they put them on Twitter.
Right.
And why they would voluntarily serve as Donald Trump's content mules to disseminate his inflammatory, his hate speech, his anti-Semitic speech, his attacks on the Constitution, I don't know. But what we should be talking about instead is he engaged in that latest cry for help at a time when, and we just went over this, the 11th Circuit said all his efforts to stall the investigation and the stolen documents investigation are about to be shut down. Both his White House lawyers testified for between them 10 hours.
Uh-huh.
Stephen Miller testified. Dan Scavino testified. Two more of his close aides testified. A jury is in minutes going to return to deliberating on whether Trump Organization engaged in tax fraud.
Yep.
And there are additional signs that he is more, I'm not saying the walls are closing in. I'm saying he's very vulnerable. I said in the post that I just referenced, Trump is a mob boss whose omerta has started to fail.
Interesting.
And that is what we are seeing. We are seeing Trump trying to command the attention of the press. We are seeing Trump trying to use the threat of political violence as a way to threaten DOJ not to prosecute him. DOJ and New York State and New York City and a bunch of other and Fannie Willis. And we are seeing, again, a mob boss realizing that whereas in the past he was able to get people to lie for him or to refuse to cooperate because he had the pardon power. He doesn't have that power now.
Right.
His two lawyers spent 10 hours in front of a grand jury. And we know that those two lawyers know, for example, the basis of his pardons, but they also know what he said when it became clear that a mob was hunting his vice president. They know what he said. They know one of them told Cassidy Hutchinson, Pat Cipollone did, told Cassidy Hutchinson, make sure he doesn't go to the Capitol, Cass, because if he does, we're going to be charged with every kind of obstruction. Right. Golly, that's really important advice to prove that Trump knew that the things he did on January 6th were obstruction of the vote count. And so Trump knows that a grand jury has all that information right now. And so, yeah, he is, let's not minimize it. He is trying to sow political violence. He is trying to get his supporters to engage in political violence. And you know what? That has worked in the past. And there are thousands of January 6th veterans and tens of thousands more Trump supporters who will happily engage in political violence. So I don't want to minimize the threat of this, but I do want to say that he's doing this from a position of weakness, and we would do better talk about that position of weakness than service his content mule to disseminate his hate speech.
Right. I agree. And you said it's not that the walls are closing in on him. I actually disagree. It seems like they are from all different directions. You mentioned Fannie Willis, New York State, the trial of the Trump Organization, which is not him personally, but it's his universe. You mentioned
it
New York
credit. I mean, it's his credit. It may make him, like I think both Trump Organization and the failing social media site have real challenges from a business perspective. And, would Trump's rabid supporters follow him so unquestioningly if it became clear he's a failed businessman,
right?
If it became clear he's not a billionaire, if it became clear that he's been a fraud all along, I don't know, but I'm not going to say the walls are closing in. I am going to say that I think Trump knows better than we do all of the ways in which his enormous fraud is about to become exposed or can be exposed within a matter of certainly, Fannie Willis has to make a decision in weeks, not months. Uh-huh. So.
And New York City, you mentioned, did Alvin Bragg all of a sudden get have a divine intervention and now he's filing charges again, or he's reopening the investigation that he shut down?
Yeah, I don't want to lead anyone to invest too much in any one investigation, because the honest thing is that, Steve Bannon was indicted on contempt in well over a year ago, and he won't be in jail 4 months jail time until probably July at the earliest. Prosecutions take a long time. Tom Barak was acquitted.
Right.
Prosecutions of white collar criminals are difficult. So I really don't want people to believe that an indictment of Donald Trump is the solution for any of this. What is a more likely solution is for his followers to believe that he's a loser.
And, I forget who was being interviewed, but I heard an interview over the weekend and somebody was saying, what is the most damaging thing to Trump? And it's not all the evidence that is stacked up, but it's calling him a loser. It's that simple. Just having that word associated with him will cause him to have hemorrhage support more than laying out all the charges that are building up against him.
Right. I mean, if Trump's followers come to believe he's weak, he's not a business genius, he's not a billionaire, he's not very powerful, Kanye West can make him look like a fool, which he did.
He did.
If his followers begin to see Trump as not only weak, but as somebody who defrauded them, which he did, then I think you're going to see an erosion of his support. What happens from that point isn't necessarily a good thing. I mean, a lot of these people, absent the belief in something like Trump, will, become even more dangerous. And a lot of these violent radicals have gone underground, making it a lot harder to prevent their political violence. There's this quote unquote sabotage in North Carolina that may be terrorism, which, knocked the power out for 40,000 people. We don't know yet what that is, but I think that, no one knows what's going to happen. An indictment of Donald Trump, 7 indictments of Donald Trump are not going to be enough to quell the fire of his supporters. But it does pay to point out what a loser is. That's it right. does pay to point out that he doesn't have the power he used to have. It does pay to point out that both of his businesses are struggling and may struggle in much greater fashion. It does pay to show that he can't even come back on Twitter because he has contractual obligations to stay on his loser social media site, you know? Because that's really what I think, as you just said, I think that that is a quicker route to disempowering Donald Trump than prosecution in 2025 would be.
Right. And then, of course, we're getting to the end of the 117th Congress. So the January 6th Commission is wrapping up. Apparently, they met on Friday to discuss criminal referrals. They're going to issue their final report. And I hear there's going to be one last public hearing, I guess, in which they release their findings. Can they transfer this over to a Senate committee since the Senate is still under Democratic control, or is it just done?
I think that there are means that they can, plus they're releasing all of their transcripts. Mm-hmm. So I'm of those who believe that not enough. I mean, I'm grateful that Liz Cheney put some order to the Democrats, but Liz Cheney really protected DOJ. Really protected the FBI. And until we have a full understanding of just how corrupt Bill Barr, Jeffrey Rosen's DOJ was, until we have a full understanding of the degree to which the FBI refused to investigate Trump's people because he had trained them not to.
Right.
Every single person who had ever investigated Trump's people had their career at the FBI ruined. And therefore, it was unsurprising that the FBI was unprepared for January 6th. It was unsurprising that the FBI was treating Joe Biggs as an ally rather than as a target. But I hope that I hope that Warnock wins.
Yeah, me too.
Giving Democrats the all important subpoena power that would allow them to conduct an investigation into why, particularly the FBI, was so woefully unprepared on January 6th, because that is something that won't be as central a focus of the January 6th findings as Donald Trump's role.
Absolutely. Oh, Marcy Wheeler, there's so much still up in the air. You do an amazing job of keeping all the things in order. I can't thank you enough for sharing your knowledge with us. So if I don't talk to you before the holidays, happy holidays, and thank you for staying on top of this all. You do you offer a great service, and I hope people appreciate it.
It's always great to be on, Nicole. Hope you have happy holidays as well.
Me too. Thank you. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Thanks.
Take care. Marcy Wheeler, everybody. She does the work. And if you don't read emptywheel.net every day, then you're missing out, because she really does a great job in keeping, you know, all the ducks in a row. I hate that saying, but you know what I'm saying. I have a hard enough time just keeping the events of a day straight. And she, you know, from memory mostly, she just rattles this stuff off. But her site is not all just cut and dry serious. She's got a number of contributors who also write there. One, I saw BMAZ today, who just had to write a post about Chrissy Hynde of the Pretenders being like the best female rock and roller ever that you need to see live. And I agree. So, we cover a broad spectrum there. So Marcy Wheeler really is a treasure. And I read her site daily, as you should, emptywheel.net. But it's such a treat to have her come on this show regularly and be so forthcoming with her truth and with her time, because, every 2 to 3 weeks these days, I'm calling on her again to please come on and, just, and she does. She just answers my question. Honestly, when she comes on, we don't have an agenda of what we're going to go through. I generally have a list of stories that have transpired since the last time she was on, and I just mention one and she goes. You know, some people will say, can you give me a list of questions you're going to ask? No, I don't do that, because honestly, I don't write a list of questions. I like to have a conversation with the people that I'm interviewing. And when it comes to Marcy Wheeler, just there are very few as knowledgeable as her about what's going on. And keep in mind, she's covering what's happening here in the States while living in Ireland. I have the utmost respect. All right. We're just about at the end of the hour. Tomorrow is that every other Tuesday, so Got a Laugh will be here. And thankfully, she spent the day listening to what happened at the Supreme Court. And, you know, Rudy Giuliani had a bar hearing today, I guess, on his future as a lawyer. He's still a lawyer. Anyway, we'll get into all that tomorrow. And anything that happened today, we'll talk about tomorrow. Okay. Thank you, as always, for listening. Please come back tomorrow. I promise a good time. Hey. All right. Because we can, I'll leave you with the news. And once again, thank you for listening. And if you can, if you enjoy the show and you like what you hear, support it. Go to NicoleSandler.com. Click on the donate button. I live based on what you guys, you know, how you support the show. All right. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Thank you, everyone. Bye. Whoops. Okay. Where's my news? Why is that not playing? All right. Well, that's not working. I guess I'll have to play it from here. I hate it when that happens, but it's okay. We'll survive because, you know, we do. Here we go. Uh-oh. Come on. All right. Something funky is going on. Nothing wants to work. Whoa. Okay, there we go. All right, see you tomorrow. Bye.
From NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
About 45,000 customers remained without electricity in a south central North Carolina county after two electric substations were damaged by gunfire late Saturday. Moore County's sheriff said that the person who did this knew what they were doing, and added, it appears they were trying to shut down the county, but officials don't have a motive or suspect. So the FBI has joined the investigation. All schools in the county are closed today and traffic lights remain out. A few stores with generators have been able to open, but most other businesses have been forced to temporarily close. And while there's no known motive or suspect yet, investigators are looking into whether or not there's a link to a Saturday night drag show, which far-right activists have been trying to shut down. Seriously, stay tuned. Well, it's all over but the same day voting. Senator Raphael Warnock and his Republican challenger, Herschel Walker, are making their final cases to voters ahead of tomorrow's runoff election. Warnock ends with a small lead in the latest polls. Walker, well, let's just say he's having some problems. First, there's his ties to the former guy. Then there's a series of his speeches in which he talked about vampire movies, pregnant cows, and how our good air decided to float over to China's bad air. Things like that. And a few exes who've come forward to say that he pressured them into getting and paid for abortions. And in just the past few days, five more women coming forward to tell of his violent outbursts during their relationships with him. A woman named Cheryl Parsa told NBC News on Sunday that she was in a five-year relationship with Walker in the 2000s. She said that during an argument in 2005, Walker pressed her head against a wall, grabbed her throat, and cocked his fist to throw a punch that missed and struck the wall. His campaign hasn't responded to multiple requests for comment. But one thing we do know is that Walker admits to being treated for some serious psychological disorders, including DID, that's dissociative identity disorder, known to some as multiple personality disorder. Walker says he's overcome his illness, but experts say that that's simplistic at best. Like other mental illnesses, DID cannot be cured in the classic sense. Psychiatrists say that while patients can learn to manage this disorder
and even live symptom-free for extended periods, the symptoms can recur, often triggered by stress. The more you know. By the way, Democrats already held on to control of the Senate by winning 50 seats in the midterms in November, but holding on to Warnock's seat would give them a potentially crucial one-seat cushion. And Georgians have voted so far, with about 300,000 people voting early each day last week, setting records for the largest single-day early voting turnout in state history. In other news, Iran's parliament and judiciary are reportedly reviewing that country's mandatory hijab law. The wearing of a hijab in public is mandatory for women in Iran, a nation ruled under strict Islamic law, and it's enforced by the country's so-called morality police. Well, the morality police have been under fire from weeks of anti-government protests that were ignited by the death of a 22-year-old Kurdish-Iranian woman named Mahsa Amini. She was arrested by the morality police allegedly because she was wearing her hijab improperly. Well, there were reports in recent days that the morality police had been disbanded, but the state-run Al Alam television station has pushed back on that claim, saying, quote, no official of the Islamic Republic of Iran has said that the guidance patrol has been shut, but we'll wait and see if the laws are loosened. And it's like deja vu all over again. A post-Thanksgiving rise in coronavirus infections has pushed COVID-19 hospital cases to their highest level in 3 months. More than 35,000 COVID patients are hospitalized, building pressure on health systems that are already overloaded with waves of flu and that respiratory virus, RSV. Nearly 20,000 Americans were sent to hospitals with the flu during Thanksgiving week, the most seen in that holiday week in more than 10 years. Public health officials are concerned that the combined surges could overwhelm some hospitals. If you haven't already, get boosted. And finally, there's a price to be paid for living in paradise, I guess. Lava from the Mauna Loa volcano eruption is now about 2 miles from reaching a crucial highway on Hawaii's Big Island. The lava is just 2 miles from reaching the Daniel K. Inouye Highway on Hawaii's Big Island. But experts say it's unlikely that any attempts will be made to redirect the lava flow due to a history of, quote, expensive failures. Some scientists and residents of Hawaii also view the lava flow as a natural phenomenon, not something that needs to be disrupted. Plus, many people in Hawaii view the timing of the volcano's eruption as especially significant. The volcano erupted on November 28th, Hawaiian Independence Day, which commemorates when Hawaii was recognized as a sovereign kingdom in 1843. All righty then. And that's just a bit of what's news. For now, I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.